Okay, welcome back to episode 166. Joe, how you doing?
Just fine, Tim. Really an exciting week. And I mean, of course, you know, we'll talk about the domestic events, the shootout. What's the name of the town?
Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Kenosha, excuse me. Yeah, I should know that because my family comes from Wisconsin. But anyway, that shootout, obviously, we'll get into. But the thing I was going to first bring up, with permission, is what's going on in Berlin. You know, last week we talked about the possibility that Berlin was going to have a really historic and potentially dynamic, by that I mean far-reaching, protest Saturday. And then 2 days ago, the German government attempted to shut it down. They created a legal structure saying that they were going to close the city. But the protesters, as it turns out, were extremely well organized and had a legal team ready to go. And as I understand the sequence of events, they were able to confuse it enough to tie it up basically legally so that the government couldn't really stop it. And in fact, a lot of this had already occurred because they had been coming into Berlin for the last week. Now, this is the status that I have been given by someone who is, you know, kind of very much involved with these people. And she has told me that they will have over 5 million people. The high end number, the high end estimate would be 10 million, which would be the largest demonstration in history. They aren't there to simply voice their concerns. The claim that I've been told is that they're there to stay until the government resigns. In other words, they want a complete concession on the lockdown, and they want Merkel to stand aside.
So they want an abdication.
They want an abdication. Okay. They have gamed. This is not a trivial maneuver. This is not a bunch of kids from Black Lives Matter showing up with hammers to break mirrors and windows. They have food and drink for millions for a week. They have achieved arrangements with airline companies to bring in protesters from different parts of the world who will somehow circumvent the quarantine and end up in the square tomorrow. And according to the rumor, and this is what I've been told, that they have the airlines who are all going broke because of the insane lockdown and lack of tourism and air travel have told the protesters that if they're able to get the government to fall, there's no charge for the ticket. It's on the house. Beyond that, several bus companies have done exactly the same. And the bus companies, of course, are all on the verge of going out of business. So what choice did they have? This would be a good thing to bring up, like in California, New York states, where we're going to have to do the same thing. But anyway, I've been told that there's over 1,200 and maybe as many as 2,000 buses that are in this kind of daisy chain right now, bringing in protesters from other countries who have walked what's called these salt trails or sugar trails. These are the old kind of commerce trails that they don't have. Border patrols, and they come across from Austria or Poland, wherever the borderline is, to this point where the bus picks them up and brings them on in. Now, this is just the beginning of what I find is exciting, because I've also been told that the police, the Berlin police, have basically rebelled. and have said that they are going to be on the side of the people.
So the government will lose the means of coercion in Berlin.
Well, at least for a period of time.
Yeah.
According to my sources, they are not going to intervene in any way in terms of enforcing any of the quarantine aspects of social distancing or masks or anything like that. They're simply going to help the crowd get assembled and basically stand with them. Now, that's just the beginning of it, because the other thing, which is just amazing to me, is the keynote will be RFK Jr. And it isn't going to be taped in. It's not going to be he is there. I actually got a live feed of him speaking to the beginning of the crowd this afternoon. And I'm telling you, the speech he gives tomorrow will be historic, because he was not pulling any punches. It was a great, just a little, clip that he gave to the people that were there, maybe 20,000 that were still there. He came out and spoke to them briefly. So RFK is going to light him up. And remember, this is where JFK, his uncle, gave the I am the Berliner speech. Mm-hmm. So you have this tremendous typology that can hopefully light up, the emotions of the sheep. Now, in terms of strategy, I don't think I'm giving anything away at this point. Their idea is to simply paralyze Berlin. I mean, this is like Black Lives Matter, except with righteousness. And they are going to use ships to like block the river. They're going to use helicopters to control the air. My sources tell me that they're going to have cameras with which they can actually get the crowd size determined, so that the New York Times is not going to be able to say this is 17,000 neo-Nazis. I mean, if this is over 5 million people, it'll be the largest demonstration, I think, in history. Now, beyond this, they have many more of these planned. And if they can topple Merkel, if they can get her to just concede on the lockdown, because that would be all it would take. Tim, every capital in Europe would light up within a week. I mean, because the people have had enough. So if they saw Germany collapse because of this, believe me, there would be demonstrations everywhere. And this group, which is an international group, it's not simply German, this group would then just go into Rome, Madrid. They would be there everywhere, just trying to do the same thing, to just basically create a true green or colored revolution. This one would be anti-COVID, to just topple government after government and to force referendums, end of lockdowns. And then, if this happens, then of course, maybe even the U.S. Might take a turn for a better. Anyway, so I just wanted to give that information. I am very confident in the quality of the source. I think events are going to unfold over the next couple of days, which probably the description that I've given will be inaccurate, because I think this could really be history unfolding, Jim.
Well, if it's the scale in which you're describing it, that would suggest that there's been a large breaking of the ranks within the government, or factions within the government, within the corporate structure, the regime, if you will, that simply isn't going along with the game anymore, or isn't following the plan, and they've realized what's at stake, and they're breaking ranks and joining the other side.
I have been told that a general from the German military will be on the stage tomorrow.
Military.
A general.
And I don't think he'll go up unless he thinks he has troops behind him.
I have no idea what will happen. I mean, even the idea that the police are permitting this and assisting it is just open rebellion. I mean, basically, I don't know what Merkel is going to be on a plane to Timbuktu if this is the case, because who's going to defend her? I mean,
well, these governments are all legitimate. Same with the state governments here in the States.
They're totally legitimate, and they should all leave. The story I'm getting is so sunny, and even though I just trust these sources just with my life, I just need to see it to believe it. I just wanted to give this information, because tomorrow morning when our show goes out, this will still be in play, and people who listen to it hopefully will, because I don't think mainstream is going to give them much coverage, if you find out it's happening, and if there's any way at all that you're able to support it. I don't know how, but sometimes people are creative and can do these things. Please do so. This is just, I mean, this is a turning point in history, because if we can, if these people have enough power, enough vox populi, to get apparatus of the government, to get generals, police, you know, these things to come on board, if that's actually possible, then I don't know where it could end. But anyway, it gives us hope.
Well, because in order to implement this plan, you know, that they have, the ultimate plan, which is technocratic tyranny, is they need mid-level officials, upper to mid-level officials, to implement it. And if they're deciding that they don't want to be a part of it anymore, then they won't be able to implement it. I mean, no matter how much money or control they have, because they can't, they need people doing their bidding for them. And so it's a good sign that you have organized resistance within Berlin police and in the military, because that suggests that's an old fashioned coup d'etat or revolution.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting how it play in the European theater, if you will. Look at it as a war. the European theater, the United States is very different, because the United States, the tyranny has been carried out largely, well, by a passive White House, but mostly by state level, with dozens of tyrants and hundreds of thousands of tyrants, local officials. And I think in many respects, if you look at the operation, it mirrors or it looks a lot like Agenda 21, where it appears to be locally implemented, but it's really centrally controlled. And so you've had this agenda roll out since March or February. And the various mayors, governors, DAs and local officials have implemented the plan, and that they're maintaining the lockdown. And, some have suggested that the federal government step in and force them open, which I think there's you can make a legal claim for that, given that, everyone's civil rights are being violated. When governors close churches, that's a violation of the First Amendment, it'd be interesting how it plays out here in the States, because the political setup is so different. I've heard there's ways you can attempt it. There's legitimate way through the system. I know there's a recall efforts made in several states. California, they say there's a recall petition that's gaining steam because of not only the lockdown but also the power outages now that Californians are experiencing. And so there's that way. There's also the fact that stage two of this thing is also the rioting that was stoked in late spring, in the wake of the George Floyd incident. But it seems to be dragging on, because every few weeks there's an incident that they can exploit. And lo and behold, some mayor or some governor comes out and fans the flames, making accusations of racism, something like that. Like the recent incident up in Kenosha, Wisconsin, where Jacob Blake, resisting arrest, fighting with cops, dove into his car, and they end up having to shoot him. He's still alive. He's paralyzed, if I understand, in the hospital. But then all of a sudden, this is used as an excuse for yet more rioting and more business destruction and these things. And now we have an incident where, there's a complete stand down. The governor, the mayor, local police, the state troopers, even the National Guard aren't doing anything. Now you have private militiamen coming in defending property in these cities, which ultimately is what you have to do if the state, which we all pay for, by the way, I'm sure the taxpayers of Wisconsin pay hundreds of millions of dollars a year in taxes to the state to protect them, and the state's just abdicated its role in this. In fact, anyway, it's encouraging it. So now we have an incident where a 17-year-old boy was forced to kill two assailants and a third injure him. To defend himself, he's being assailed, and he's charged. So we have another radical DA charging him, when all evidence suggests that he was defending himself. But
the New York Times reviewed it, and they said it was an open and shut example of self defense. So I think it's going to be hard to get a conviction when the New York Times won't even stand up for the charges.
But it's something like this, whether it's Berlin or even like this here in the States, it's kind of an inflection point or changing where people are just tired of it. And they're trying to paint the, if you see the picture of the boy, They're trying to paint him as a radical, like this baby-faced boy, you know, who, by the way, kept his cool and handled his weapon, you know, like an expert.
Well, I don't know. Did you see the videos? There are several videos. One of the lead up to the first shooting, and then the chase, and then there was actually a reverse image video shot from the back, which showed the assailant coming on the kid. And even though the media basically said he was carrying a phone, it was very, you know, the video shows it was a gun.
Yeah, it's a gun. Yes.
But I was amazed. First of all, the most interesting part of it was the beginning, where you had maybe 20, I'd say, young white males. They may have had one black in with them, but I couldn't tell whose side it was on. But the vast majority of these people who were defending Kenosha were young white males, probably all of them under 30.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand they had actually... they weren't really a militia per se. There was a couple concerned activists who used Facebook to try to organize just people to come together who had weapons and knew how to use them.
Mm-hmm.
So what you had was a physical confrontation face to face between Black Lives Matter, Antifa on one side, and right in their face were this group of white males, all of them with AR-15s. And there was actually an exchange between Rosenbaum, who is from a Jewish family but non-practicing, because I had some communication with a group and they said, no, he's not really a Jew because his family was Jewish, but he's non-practicing. So I thought that was sort of...
Was he the convicted pedophile or
sex
offender?
Yeah, he was a pedophile, of course. Yeah. He'd been in prison for sex charges. But there was this extraordinary moment of glossolalia. I don't know if you know what that means. It's speaking in tongues.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a word that people who like write weird papers about, you know, the Bible would know, but very few people. So I thought I'd throw it out. Where you had this Rosenbaum become an African-American rap male.
Yes, he says, shoot me, nigga, shoot me, nigga.
And he just, but in his whole demeanor, he became like this image. I mean, this would have, I mean, if you could have like, showed this to like a group of like sociologists, they would have all have understood it immediately. Here was someone who actually had taken on the identity, you know, like all of, because he, and I thought, you know, I it was just sort of amazing because there was a lot of blacks around him. And when you have a white guy talk like that, who's using,
yes,
you know, he's using the N-word over and over again. And he's behaving as he sees them. And his behavior is just so atrocious and violent. And he's like a caricature of the African-American male. I mean, it was like incredibly insulting, I thought, to any African-American male who saw this imitation that Rosenbaum did of them, you know, and he's screaming at this guy, shoot me, nigga. And he's like, you know, like he's twisting his body around. And, and I think he's trying to be, you know, a black oppressed person. And this is, of course, I mean, you can see this is sort of the end result of cultural Marxism, right, where you've actually transitioned into, you know, they've transitioned the people who they have like seduced with the sophistry and the propaganda. They've actually turned them into another ethnicity, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, because he was just in, and if you see the videotape, he talks for quite a while, and then, you know, as the video goes on, you can see that these people are really quite insane, the Black Lives Matter, because, or at least the warrior class of them. Because here they are chasing after this guy who has an AR, and the one tries to, and does actually, hit him with a skateboard. And this would be, you know, like the joke of, you know, like bringing like a knife to a gunfight, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he'd never bring a skateboard to a gunfight, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the skateboard isn't the weapon of choice here. He's lost control of his senses, and he pays the ultimate price.
Doesn't it tell you about almost the psychology of the people who participate in this, that you have men in their mid-30s trolling around on skateboards?
Yeah, who are then charging into AR. So... You can see that how dangerous, you know, this group is, because they will literally die for this, you know, programmed insanity that they have inside them.
Well, I think almost they're so hyped up that they think they're invincible until the bullets come. You know, it's almost like there's people who thought they're invincible if they drank a potion, they could charge gunfire of the they'd be invincible, and then of course they find out that they're not.
It's like in the Iran-Iraq war, at least, you know, this was what I was told, is that they would have the 13th Ayman, who would, you know, the descendant of Muhammad, who was a mythical character, a messianic character, who was always in white. And they actually would, the night before the battle, they would bring someone out on a white horse, all dressed in white, and the children that they had with them would watch this, with the idea that the children would be told they would be invincible so they could walk ahead of the army to set off the landmines.
Yeah.
So this was, I have no idea I wasn't there, but this is what I was told. But that's an example of, you know, you can get people to do just about anything. I mean, you know, think about like my grandfather at the Somme walking into automatic weapon fire with mustard gas, you know. So propaganda, all these things are, you know, very powerful. And certainly America has this cohort. And of course, the real problem is if you look at the support they have, you look at the buses that are bringing them in, you know, they have funding. And of course, they have government sanction in many cases. You know, they're sanctioned by the government to help with the destruction that the lockdown has begun. And they are funded. So the white middle class is the target. It doesn't understand it yet, but is starting to wake up. I mean, and the kids, because I thought, well, they're young adults that organize themselves in Kenosha. I mean, I just think that's, you know, unfortunately, that's the wave of the future.
Well, isn't it inevitable if you keep doing this? I mean,
of course.
I mean,
and I also think that, you know, in a sad way, because I think that the race war is the distraction. I mean, I think that they're trying to maneuver both sides into this conflict. But I don't think that the whites have any choice. And I also think that if they do, you know, basically a good job on the martial front, in other words, if they create a lot of casualties, say something on the order of like 10 times what happened in Kenosha, that'll slow down the enthusiasm of the Black Lives
Matter.
And
also the politicians that are enabling it. You still, right now, and I think they might be mistaken here from a political standpoint to the extent that matters, but you right in the wake of the Jacob Blake incident, the shooting, this is the shooting that sparked these riots in Kenosha, supposedly. I think, these things are just stoked up. I don't think... they're actually organic in any, largely they're created, but Joe Biden offered sympathy to the family, and said, "What I saw on that video makes me sick. Once again, a black man, Jacob Blake, has been shot by the police in the broad daylight, with the whole world watching. I don't know what time of day matters or whether the whole world is watching." It was videotaped or filmed,
but it fans the flames.
And, you know, Biden's added, "Put yourself in the shoes of every black father, every black mother in this country and ask, is that what we want America to be? Is this the country we should be?" Now, he's indicting the police in this situation. He's not anyway holding Mr. Blake responsible for his actions. A convicted felon, he was brandishing a knife at a gas station, which sparked the incident to begin with. If Mr. Blake, you know, there he is. Suppose he had kids in the car, so why is he acting this way? If he just simply answered questions and submitted to the arrest, nothing would have happened. Yet we have another case where A black man is resisting arrest, creating a violent, volatile situation, and pays the price for it. But nevertheless, the politicians, whether it's Biden fanning the flames nationally, that's what he's doing, and with his, dutifully with his mask on, and the, of course you have the governor up there, Evers, same thing, they're just fanning the flames. And then they stand back, and they let, not only do they fan the flames of the riot, they don't bring any force to bear to suppress it, to stop it. They let it go and let the place get burned down.
Yeah, this is the second phase. I mean, they destroy the businesses with the lockdown,
mm-hmm.
And now that the businesses are vacant and undefended, they bring in the Floyd George crowd, who I don't know if you saw the video of the first. Breaking of windows in Minneapolis. It was by a black dressed white guy with an umbrella, just mm-hmm. a mistake, a start of the process. So this is just the second phase. And the idea is to impoverish the white middle class, to make them basically discombobulated mentally, we'll accept the RNA vaccine, and of course be begging for food because the food shortages, so that we will basically just be put into a situation where we're easy, to enslave. I was going to point out that Biden's sincerity as a, defender of black males is a little bit on the weak side, in my opinion, because I don't know if you ever saw the video of Biden meeting this Israeli and explaining to him how big a Zionist he was. Mm-hmm. If you ever seen it, but it's just absolutely horrendous. I mean, Biden basically does everything except French kiss the guy for 30 seconds. I mean, he is just so obsessed with making sure this person knows how gigantic a Zionist he is. But somehow the dark-skinned Palestinians never quite got into Biden's consciousness at this point. So when you see Biden being so concerned about this black kid, who tragically got in this encounter with police, I don't know. I think it's a little bit of a theater, don't you? And I'm going to say, Tim, I love predictions. This will continue up to election and then dramatically worsen. So you're going to have other cities will flare up. Black Lives Matter will be looting and burning even more between now and the election. And then I think Trump will win in a landslide, obviously. I mean, the way the Electoral College is set up, even if it was held today, where, according to the polls, he's down by 2 or 3 points, he would easily win the Electoral College. By the time that you get done with all the rioting they have in mind, Trump will win basically a Reagan, type landslide, win like 90% of the Electoral College. But the point is that they will then be able to descend the country into a kind of civil war.
Well, that's the thing, is you still have the problem of these local officials that are, agents of Discordian agents who have been installed,
Yeah, the Soros DAs, mayors, all that crap.
The down ballot candidates, the mayors, obviously, the Lightfoots, the Whitmores, the Newsoms, the Evers, you got the idiot up in Maine who's making
Mills
making people wear dog cones and wolf in Pennsylvania. So the governor here in Virginia is pretty, and you have Biden himself, who's campaigning on, it used to be you campaign on pocketbook issues. It was the economy, stupid. Now it's destroy the economy, stupid, is his campaign. And he wants to have a national mandate for masks wearing. I don't know where or when, or if the depends on the weather, but it's absurd. But we've come to a situation where absurdities are just accepted as policy.
No. Yeah, they have created that perspective where the public doesn't even. I mean, at this point, we would, if they told us that they sold Washington to the Chinese, I think it would almost you'd be ho hum. I mean, the public has been step by step conditioned into numbness. intellectual numbness where they just see the world of the media and the world of politics as something they're not associated with. And this is what they've been trying to do all along.
Mm-hmm.
It is so crazy. And of course, it's so bifurcated. I mean, none of these people are from the people. I mean, someone like, you know, Nancy Pelosi, you know, this clique is so stratified that it's just like watching basically a movie that goes on above the public. We're not connected, and therefore we accept insanity, but we don't really want to do this because the insanity becomes clear enough to have a method at a certain point when they get the camp set up, when the food shortages start, you know, when suddenly starting the depopulation phase comes on.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be recognized. You know, it's almost like you know, you'd like to see next time that whether maybe this time next year when they're meeting at Davos that the whole place is just surrounded, everyone's arrested there. The same way that, like in 1957, there's a 1957 meeting in upstate New York where the New York State Troopers spotted a bunch of fancy cars going to his destination. They realized it was all the members of the five families, and then they raided it and they arrested like 60 participants in it. And that's when Hoover was forced to recognize the existence of La Cosa Nostra, the mafia, if you will, because he was bribed and blackmailed to say there wasn't such an organization, and they had to admit it, that this thing did exist. And it's almost like maybe if the good guys were able to get a hold of of the police or something, they could raid one of these confabs, whether it's the Bilderberg or Davos, and arrest these guys, and then get them all when they're all together, and solve the problem, if you will.
I'm just hoping that out of the Berlin situation, you get some truth bombs. I mean, this would be, I think, a great step in terms of the secret society running the different countries, in terms of things like 911.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of things like the collusion with Israel. I mean, we need to get truth bombs to be set off if we get an opportunity where you actually have a government that's not in secret society control for a period of time. I think it's almost inevitable that it will happen. I'm very hopeful. I know that having talked to people who are, working on this thing, I mean, Tim, these guys are 100% clear-minded about history, about about what has happened, about who's running slave camp worldwide setup. I mean, there's no confusion. So, everyone is a little delicate right now, I think, because who knows what the next few weeks will hold. But if they can actually topple the government, let us hope that finally there'll be some, truth, some clarity that comes out of one media source. I have no idea what would happen. I mean, just imagine if someone is starting to speak what's real in Germany. I mean, it would be like, incomprehensible to CNN or Fox News. I mean, they would just, they could not possibly report on it. But the internet would just light up with it. So anyway, we'll see what happens. But man, what a week. It wasn't... it was a week that, particularly now that at one point I was very discouraged because I thought that they'd be able to stop the protests. I wasn't aware of the planning that had gone on.
Well, I like the fact that they tried to, and if they pull it off, they couldn't. That's a great sign.
They could stop them, yeah. That's right, because that will definitely embolden people who want to have mass protests and couple governments in the other capitals.
Mm-hmm.
I was there last year. I was in Barcelona during the September 11th, oddly enough, the Independence Day of Barcelona. And, I saw like 500,000 people in the streets. There were several hundred federal alleys with machine guns. But it occurred to me that if the public really got angry, they wouldn't have any trouble at all just overwhelming that.
Yeah. It's biomass,
so, yeah. So I think that you're going to have some blood spilled, sad to say, but you could. It's easy to imagine, given how angry people are about the lockdown.
Well, if it gets to the point where they're mandating, what they call a vaccine, which is really a RNA sort of
modification
injection. There's going to have to be blood spilled because when it gets to that point, what do you do? You know,
that's it's self-defense at that point. They'll be mass bloodshed if they try to do it, if they just try to go door to door with the needle. Mm-hmm. I mean, good luck with that program. I don't think that would fly. So they'll have to do it through coercion and propaganda, you know. But in any case, just the fact that they're going to try shows that they have to be taken out at this point. We have no choice.
Yeah, there's a interesting, this is the Paul Joseph Watson article for InfoWars. He goes, UK government scientist admits lockdown was a monumental mistake on a global scale. And you say, well, mistake, wasn't a mistake, but in any event, a scientific advisor of the UK government says the coronavirus lockdown was a panic measure and a monumental mistake on a global scale. An infectious diseases expert and University of Edinburgh professor Mark Woolhouse acknowledged that the decision to lock down in March was a crude measure that was enacted because we couldn't think of anything better to do. Wow. Lockdown was a panic measure, and I believe history will say trying to control COVID-19 through a lockdown was a monumental mistake on a global scale. The cure was worse than the disease, said Woolhouse, who is now calling on the government to unlock society before more damage is done. I never want to see national lockdown again, he added. It was always a temporary measure that simply delayed the stage of the epidemic we see now. It was never going to change anything fundamentally. The professor asserts that the impact of the response to the coronavirus will be worse than the virus itself. I believe the harm the lockdown is doing to our education, healthcare access, and broader aspects of our economy and society will turn out to be at least as great as the harm done by the COVID-19, said Woolhouse. Figures show that there were more excess deaths during the 2017-2018 flu season, around 50,000, than the total number of the people in the UK have died from the coronavirus, 41,433. However, a survey conducted last month found that Brits thought around 7% of the population, 5 million people, had been killed by COVID-19 because of all the propaganda.
Well, of course. Had a chance to interact with an attorney in Melbourne who's trying to bring legal action against the government to end it, and gave her the idea that she should demand that the government produce blood work showing that the COVID has actually killed somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we talked about this last week, that they've never gone through Cox postulates. And that no one has the slightest idea. I actually was able to talk to a virologist this week about this. And he confirmed that you should be able to tell by blood work how much virus is in someone and whether or not, then you can make a guess as to whether or not that was responsible for the death. I mean, mm-hmm. very, very tiny amounts of the virus, enough so that you could have a positive in one of the PCR tests. They have nothing to do with anyone's health, as of course is demonstrated by the fact that, well, everyone who tests positive is healthy. So that's clear. But the idea that of these death counts, which were used to, you know, frighten everyone, they've never actually done that. I mean, it's just an amazing oversight. They've never actually said, well, here's the blood work of someone who died from COVID, and we now know for a fact that if you get a viral load of this amount, some number, some percentage, that you're going to be sick and then you'll likely die. Well, if they cannot produce that in a single case, then this whole thing is a joke,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, where is, and what I would, what I was saying, but even if they could produce it in a single case, that wouldn't be enough to justify a lockdown. They have to prove it in every single case.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of, and I, this is what I suggested to her, was demand the blood work. They have to have serologic tests of these people. I think it's mandated in the coroner's process. Ask to see what the viral load is. And then take those tests, right? Take the blood. Just say, give me 10. I'll take 10. And combine it with 100 healthy people and tell their experts to pick out the people who died.
Mm-hmm.
If they can't do it, well, sorry. You can't lock anybody.
Yeah, they have
down because you don't have any.
Was it the NFL? There are 77 players who tested positive. It turns out they're all false positives. 77 all at the same time. You know, now imagine, extrapolate that. All the positive tests, all the cases that are being cited.
Well, I mean,
is it, they're not calling it a case-demic now because it's now cases.
Yeah, so then you have like California this afternoon became the first perpetually locked down entity in the world. You probably missed it. Gavin Newsom gave his new how to get out of the lockdown. And basically has four stages. You start out if you have more than 7 per 100,000, and that's an extreme lockdown, you know, where business, you can't have eat inside with restaurants and things. But in order to clear, you have to be, get this, Tim, 1 in 100,000.
You mean this is someone who you can't have more than 1 in 100,000 who tests.
In other words, well, the way it works
positive.
Is you have to, you take like the say you have 500,000 people, the week of the testing, you can't have more than 5 people. So 5 out of in a population of 100,000 has to, there can't be any more positive tests than that. And then once you get to 1 in 100,000, you have to stay there for 21 days. You can't have, oh no, you had 6 in 100,000 this week, so you're back to square one. So as was pointed out, this could never basically release us from something like the flu or the common cold, because there's always going to be more than 1 in 100,000. So basically, it's a perpetual lockdown. Now, this will create some fireworks, hopefully, because, you know, when you look at like city of San Francisco, with half of the storefronts, are not just closed, Tim, but the businesses have left and gone and are out of business. More than half. Okay. So, I mean, what can you say to a social program that basically has destroyed a city's economy?
Now,
now you're going to lock it down harder, so make it more difficult.
So who's doing all this testing? What if people don't participate in the testing?
Well, I mean,
Who's scrutinizing the numbers, the stats?
Okay, the state of California has testers all over the place. And if you feel like you're sick, you can go in and get tested. And if you test positive, then you've rung the bell for a COVID case. And in our county, we had, I think, to get out of like the we're in the worst stage, we would have to get down to under, I think, 6 per 100,000.
Are they combining a PCR test with antibody tests?
They didn't combine everything. They
just throw a fraud, everything. Yeah.
There's no standardization. And, of course, false positives.
Yes.
Tim, we lead the nation in false positives. So it's not even, you know, the idea that it's even serious.
Well, firstly, everyone's going to have a coronavirus, you know, either antibodies or presence, because they're all around you. There's more than 200 of them.
This isn't even at the level of like a Kim Dum-Soom Korea dictatorship. I mean, this is like, you know, an insane Roman Caesar appointing his horse governor of Sicily or something. I mean, it's just bat dung crazy.
And who sets the standard for 1 in 100,000?
Well, he does. I mean, he just comes up with, believe me.
And this is science.
Yeah, this is science.
Okay.
So what I think spurred it, because it came this afternoon, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they're kind of looking at the Berlin situation and thinking about, well, I better get my lockdown, you know, all the way to the hard edge now, because who knows what the future holds.
Well, Gavin might get his hair mussed a little bit.
It could happen, brother, because, you know, a lot of the businesses are basically, the business owners are just enraged. And the population is getting close to having enough, because you have to bear in mind, like where I live, nobody's dying. No one, I mean, there, I know the county's had supposedly around 30 fatalities, something like that. But they're all these ancient or comorbid people. They're people that are so sick, they're about to die anyway. And of course, there's no standardization, right? There's no, well, here's the blood work. It's very dangerous. We're all going to die. I mean, you go to the beach, nobody gives a rat's eyebrow about the COVID thing. No, people are just walking around just normal. They don't care because no one is afraid of it any longer. The fear of the virus is gone. And so it's at this point, it's simply hard-nosed dictatorship. You know, I honestly, I think, you know, it's going to come down to at some point, blood's going to have to run here.
Well, they're creating conditions for that because they're giving people no choice. I mean, they're not, you can't appeal to reason or the facts. You can't debate them. They're not even subjecting themselves to press conferences where journalists ask these questions. These are questions you think someone would ask them. You know,
of course, they won't even. This just shows you that this is just lying sophistry propaganda because they can't even handle like 30 seconds of questions from a high school class. I told you before the show started, I was in contact with someone who in Melbourne who said that he was organizing groups or a group. Escape from Melbourne. It's like a bad move. How to get their families out across these, you know, Melbourne is a pretty large region, and I guess there's some areas they think they can sneak through. But just think about that in a Western country where, you know, you have this like Soviet Stasi kind of Gestapo that you have to, you know, like twist and turn around. They're going to try to get their families out into the bush, into a farm area, where they think they can then better organize some resistance in Melbourne.
Hmm. So they get the women and children out, then plan some sort of.
Yep. But you know, in Melbourne, there are demonstrations that are occurring. They're small, but they are increasing. There was one that I think had 11,000 subscriptions. It was just a Facebook sign up, and then the government came in and arrested everybody, like they did the first time. But as my understanding is, the date is still. It's in the future. It's like a week in the future, and the date still stands. And someone else then popped up with another sign-up sheet. And I mean, you know, when you are about to be starved to death, you can become very motivated. And when I was talking with the people in Melbourne, I brought up your brilliant point last week, which I didn't get a chance to praise you highly enough. But over the week, I was thinking about it, and it's absolutely critical for people to be aware of. You mentioned that no politician, when they do something as novel as extracting 33% of the meat production, when they do things like locking down the farm workers, right? When they take out the demand side, you know, when they subtract all the restaurants out so the farmers have nowhere to sell their product, no one. Not even the eye of God, to use an expression, can really be sure about what's going to happen. No one can. You brought that out, that there's just no politician can look you right in the eye and goes, don't worry, we're going to be fine. I know we're going to be fine. But this is so telling because the fact that they are risking something, right, and they clearly are doing this because they just don't have a clue as to what's going to happen. Well, that tells you what their agenda is. They wouldn't ever risk this. You know, they've got 5 million people locked down and they're messing around with the food supply.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way that they would do that if the ultimate agenda wasn't to starve them to death.
What's going on is the politicians, their vassals or instruments of, you know, the oligarchs, the financial establishment, the uber rich that really run things or presume to run things. And they're carrying out a global economic restructuring project that's one big part is freezing economic activity worldwide. And the suffering is necessary for the project because it creates a political environment where they can reset the economy and impose new terms. You know, a currency, you know, social credit system, doing away with currency, rationing and these things, 24/7 monitoring, that the tyranny that they lust for. So it's not as if you can rely on them. This is why why are they being so stubborn in this? Why are they doing this? This is so stupid. It's so destructive. Why are they doing it? And it's because they're being ordered to do it, and they're being bribed or you know, paid, bribed, or blackmailed to do it. I mean, in the United States, it's largely being carried out, you know, at the state and local level, and maybe if there's certain participants in the conspiracy, it has something to do with the elections. But I think that might backfire on them because of what's the optics of what's going on now might actually help, you know, President Trump, the incumbent.
Trump's going to win the landslide. Yeah. I'm telling you, the riots will go on right up to the election. And particularly in the last week when Trump
there just aren't the objective conditions for these extreme measures. You have these powerful financial interests who are ordering the vassal politicians to maintain, impose lockdown, bankrupt everything so they can get control of everything. That's the objective. Because there you get the great
news population. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's, here we, yeah, the Chautauqua, in some countries, Dr. Pascal Sacre. This is an article I read on what website was it? Global Research. So in some countries, some patients can leave hospitals by agreeing to wear an electronic bracelet. This is only a sample of all the totalitarian measures planned, or even already decided by our governments in favor of the coronavirus crisis. It goes much further. It's limitless, and in effect, a good part of the world, if not the whole world. And so these politicians now are just, you know, they're attacking the people they're pledged to serve and protect. And this, I think, this is a program long in planning, and now it's being implemented. And again, if you're familiar with Agenda 21 and these things, you can see how something like this is organized. And it is following the contours of Agenda 21 because they're achieving all their objectives. The smart city. Someone asked, you know, what's going on in New York with de Blasio? I says, well, how would New York ever recover? I says, well, the objective is for it not to recover, really. At least not on the terms we accepted, is that maybe they'll crash everything and convert New York into a smart city. After everything's crashed and they can buy everything up for a song and all the businesses are gone, everyone's swept out of the way, then it can become a smart city. And, you know, with all of that entails, that's the only explanation, you know, for this destruction.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're shattering us. They're impoverishing us. And in that condition will be easy to both enslave and to depopulate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, their goals for themselves, you know, the kind of Georgia Guidestone, paradise that they envision. I mean, I was talking with this guy about the Georgia Guidestone, and I don't know if you've seen the text, but, you know, it talks about there's going to be 500 million, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then it has this phrase, do not be a cancer to the earth. Do not be a cancer to the earth. It repeats it. And, of course, it repeats it in, like, Babylonian and Sumerian, you know, so it's like kind of a highly thought out articulation. And so the guy was saying, well, who are they? You know, like, who would do something like this? And I said, well, Craig, you don't know who they are? He goes, no. I said, well, in that case, you would be part of the cancer.
Yeah.
This would be your designation in the order of things. If you don't know them, then yeah, you're the cancer. So you had better be prepared to resist, being taken off the planet.
It's not an epidemic. It's not a pandemic. It's an operation. That's obvious now. I mean, best advice I ever saw on it. Someone sent me a copy of a tweet, and it says, "Time to turn off the TV and start thinking." That's the propaganda machine here. But it's, you know, it's global governance. It's global bankruptcy, and you can create a bankruptcy that you can buy everything up on a fire sale. And that's kind of putting it in like business terms. That's what's going on here. And they've talked about this. I mean, there's the lockstep Rockefeller project. Of course, we've mentioned over and over again, the, event 201, tabletop exercise in October of 2019, and how you can map out a schematic, draw a schematic of the conspiracy network, if you will, of Gates, the Imperial College of London, John Hopkins University, how all these organizations, the CDC, the World Health Organization, have the CDC and the Epidemic Intelligence Service staffs and controls all the medical journalism, public health officials, commissioners slash commissars. They all graduate sort of from the same college, same worldview, point of view, and are carrying out the same agenda. And you can just, you know, I mean, look at, you know, bring out this what's this company, Moderna, who's never even produced a vaccine, is now spearheading Operation, what was it called, Warp Speed, to produce this whiz-bang jab.
Yeah, it's been given like tens of billions of dollars, you know.
And that's house money they're playing with. You know, they never even have to produce. They never even have to produce a vaccine, and they've made a mint off this stuff. You know.
Well, I was going to at some point. Maybe not the best time, but I wanted to just read this little tweet that I had posted. Don't do this very often, but I shot it out to the people who are on my friends list. I don't know how I get so many friends on Facebook. I mean, I don't know these people, but they asked for, and if I like the photos in their Facebook page, I bring them in as friends. So we're very close. So I wrote this, and I just thought this would be kind of useful. I said, tomorrow there will be over 5 million people in Berlin demanding a restoration of freedom. RFK Jr. will address them. I wrote this right after I'd seen a little live stream clip of his speech, which I was quite inspired by it. And so I wrote, I said, I hope he repeats his prior statement about how governments are using the COVID hoax to establish dictatorships.
Mm-hmm.
And I quote Kennedy, I said, we are in the last battle. We are in the apocalypse. We are fighting for the salvation of humanity. We all knew this was coming, though I never believed it would come in my lifetime. But here it is. And then I wrote, I said, I hope he then tells the police of Melbourne and Auckland and London and Paris and everywhere that dictatorships are being established to stand down and not become a tool of tyranny. And then I close. I said, I hope he then reminds all of us that while the price of freedom begins with the refusal to comply with tyranny, sometimes the price is higher. And, I'm not advocating violence. What I'm trying to do is just to advocate inspiration, for the coming weeks.
Well, they threaten violence. They're the ones that use violence.
Yep.
Okay. When they pass mandates and they have police enforce it and these things, those in the police have to ask themselves, do you want to enforce this? They're human beings too. And they're responsible. They're not just following orders. But it gets to the point where they're, you know, quarantining people, depriving people of livelihoods to go out and, you know, live their lives, not just to earn a living, but just to live a life. The shut down all society, all civil society, whether it's theaters and you know, people being able to go to church, have weddings, these things matter, and they're shutting all that down. I mean, look at New York. Look what they did in New York.
Yeah.
Over what? You know,
look at Minneapolis, Portland, yes. Seattle. Yeah. I mean, they have literally destroyed these cities.
Mm-hmm.
And the people inside them there have been many fatalities. But moreover, there is misery that will lead to death on a vast scale just by what they've done already.
Yes.
Just by what they've done already. And going forward, you're looking at, a friend of mine who is, thinks he's an economist. I asked him. I said, "Well, what will happen if the dollar collapses?" And he said, "Well, how bad are you talking about?" I said, "Well, what if it loses 95% of its value mm-hmm. because they spend 30, 40 trillion in a year, you know, propping up the fake economy?" He said, "If the dollar collapsed, he said we would lose over half the population." That was his estimate. Over half the population. So you're looking at, 160 million people, in his opinion, are on the chopping block. And of course, those who survive wouldn't be in great shape, at least the majority of them. So this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with evil and murder and genocide on a vast scale. These guys and girls like Ardyn, the cackling satanic witch that is the prime minister of New Zealand, you know, they have to be plugged into, you know, the sense of these other people, the people that they're going to murder, like literally as farm animals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you couldn't have any kind of normal empathy, even for some stranger that washed up on the beach, you know, who's of a different ethnicity and can't speak your language. You wouldn't stab him for fun. You know, the normal human being would try to assist. Boy, to do what they're trying to do is just, they are, you know, this is like reptilian level evil, if you know what I mean. I mean,
well, it's obvious. I mean, just we've talked about it the past couple of weeks, is the, you know, the quarantining in New Zealand and the lockdown in Melbourne. And that's sort of like a, these are island nations, so you can experiment with them, see what the effect is. There's no escape, right? And so it's interesting that they picked two island nations for this. When even the numbers, if you just look at it, just the official deaths from COVID are just a fraction of what annual deaths from flu. So why the old question, why the hysteria, why the concern, numbers aren't there. What's obvious, it's a pretext for shutting everything down. Now, why do you want to shut everything down? You want to shut everything down to bring on the new economic situation, the great reset that they're talking about at next year at Davos. They plan to talk about it at Davos, that the guy Klaus Schwab talks about. And you, in order to get people, in order to, you know, implement the great reset, you have to shut the economy down, make everyone desperate, so they'll sign on to it. They'll agree to it and, you know, consent to it.
Well, we'll take the vaccine,
yeah,
we'll take the depopulation, and we'll trade all that, you know, and our children food.
And even, yeah, here we have emergency laws that technically give the government the right to mandate vaccines, but that cannot be invoked if there's established treatment for it, meaning which there is. For most people, even if this thing does exist and you can get sick with it, for the vast majority of people can be treated or just rest and be fine with it. So there's no justification, even if this thing does exist as they say it exists, for a mandatory vaccine. That's not to get into the whole issue of vaccines in general. So they don't have that power anyway, because they haven't even demonstrated the reality of a pandemic in my book. So
of course just, not. I mean, there I mean, is absolutely like, no pandemic.
Yeah.
Look. The
if that
the
means death, if that count, word means anything, I'm saying if it means anything, you know.
Yeah, the death counts. If you subtract ancient people who have comorbidities, just assuming they had COVID, if you take that out of the number,
mm-hmm.
it's not even it's not even 1/10 of 1/10 of a percent of the population.
Redfield, Redfield, the CDC said that for school age kids, it's 1 in a million.
Yeah,
one of the basically that doesn't exist. Then it really doesn't exist.
And for that, you have to lock the kids up like animals in these plastic boxes and things. So this is sophistry and propaganda on a crude scale. They are basically laughing at us. It's like the governor of Maine saying we have to wear inverted cones, you know, around our heads so that we don't breathe on one another. I mean, this is just laughing at us. So one thing that really cut deeply, my point being that that it got a lot of traction, evidently, was the organization of German doctors that came out publicly. And we got it here like within, I think, maybe a month or two ago, but it actually had happened earlier in Germany where they had brought out this position. They actually thought that Merkel would just look at their science and just say, oh my gosh, you know, end the lockdown, because it's so self-evident, you know, the position they took, the esteem that these guys had, the stature of, and a vast array of medical expertise. And Merkel just blew them off. And as my understanding is, that began the planning.
Well, that shows the bad faith.
They understood it was bad faith, which, of course, is translated as dictator.
Yes.
They understood exactly. Believe me, in Germany, they are a little sensitive to that concept. And when that happened, evidently alarm bells went off all over the place. And they not only planned, evidently, but they planned surreptitiously so that they could carry out, you know, like legal defenses and things. And they had an idea of who to get to defend them. So, you know, like the events tomorrow, I am worried about them because, you know, this is such an, you know, to get our hopes up, and then to have like a psyop, you know, to pull the rug out from under us is so typical. But this looks like there is a lot of honest effort from honest people in it. And therefore, it has the possibility of setting off the kind of firestorm. Because talking to the guys today, they were saying, you know, if we can budge Merkel just to the extent of ending the lockdown, that'll be a signal to just go right at the heads of state in every single country in Europe immediately. And from there, who knows, Tim? You know?
Yeah, I like to see him put on trial because this is treason.
Of course, they absolutely have to be put on trial. Yeah. I mean, but that's downstream.
Yeah,
because you need to have more political control to be able to even contemplate such a thing. But
well, what's necessary is just a realization that those we're not just talking about, you know, the typical idea of a politician's being crooked and self-serving and these things. No, the idea that the politicians, the mayors, the governors, public health commissioners, and you know, these are malevolent beings they're evil, and they're actually trying to hurt you. And maybe the doctors in Germany, when they realized they had all these facts lined up, is there's no there, and they're just blown off by Merkel. Well, that's the realization. Oh geez, look at her. She's obviously has another agenda, and she's serving other powers. That's a realization that Americans. And people in other countries have to make about their politicians is these are vassals, these are agents of a foreign power, transnational, cosmopolitan, globalist financial power that's malevolent. But the problem is that power only exists because people consent to or they cooperate to it. So if we unseat the political managerial class and expose them for the vassals that they are, those at the top won't have any power to implement their programs. Then you can work your way up.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. It's a process. I mean, the first thing we have to do is avoid starving to death and being injected with a genetic modification. Mm-hmm. I think that would be like goal one. But I would say I wish I could speak German. I can't, unfortunately. And the two people were very, today I was talking this afternoon, their English was, even though normally it's quite good, wasn't good enough. And I couldn't quite get some of the stuff I wanted answered. So I don't have real good data, but a real good understanding. But I'm very optimistic about tomorrow, Tim. I think it's going to be an enormous kerfuffle. I mean, the fact that they actually had brought RFK in, mm-hmm. and it kept it quiet. I mean, that's an amazing achievement. Because it's a great, think about it strategically, to bring in someone who's directly linked to JFK, who had that enormous moment in terms of democracy, at least in the classic sense.
Yeah, of course. And of course, Robert's father, Robert Kennedy Jr.'s father himself, both his uncle and his father were victims of the deep state.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's well known, too, in Germany. And so, I mean, he is without a doubt, if I could have just prayed for one person to stand up and come forward at this at the world's largest protest, it would have been him. And so when I heard his he gave a talk this afternoon. It's just incredible. I mean, he's just in his T-shirt and jeans, and they were there doing, I guess, like a sound check, and there were like already thousands of people. They're going to spend the night, I guess, a lot of them. And you know, this one kind of very dignified German in a black suit, you know, was talking, and he just gave the mic to RFK for a second, you know, just introduced him, and he just spoke very briefly. But I mean, he went right at it. He went right at the deep state. He went right at dictatorship. He didn't, you know, the idea that this is bad science or bad men. He didn't even bother with that. He went right to the heart. So, you know, well, maybe we'll. And then the other thing, which was also great, is that they had a sign. Off to the side, which talks about the brotherhood, and it had a Russian, German, and American, and they had handshakes across all these countries. The idea of a unification of the people against the oligarchs was just, I thought, transparent in this huge poster that they had in back of them. So And of course, after talking to these guys, I have the strong sense that everyone knows what the problem is. So, you know, it's what a week, Tim. I mean, Kenosha with the shootout, Gavin Newsom making California perpetually.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you think people going to sit back and accept that? He's facing a recall election. So.
Well, he is. And, of course, this is just completely bat-dung crazy. The idea of, like, 1 in 100,000 is just – I mean, what is the science in that number, for heaven's sakes? It's just preposterous. As I said, you couldn't achieve this with the flu or the cold. But there is a – you know, obviously there is a plan to the madness. This isn't just circumstance. Yeah. They know what they're doing. They're incrementally preparing us. And I think – you know, there might be hue and cry, and then he'll back up.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
You recall, like, they tested the bringing the kids out of the homes with the test positive like 3 or 4 months ago. I sent you that link, mm-hmm. and the guy Levin in Ventura County, you know, he gave a press conference saying, you know, we're going to have to, like, separate families. And then the next day, Levin backed away after a few guys told him that, yeah, well, your family is going to be separated too, you know, and so suddenly it backed up. So I thought it was just a probe. I wouldn't be surprised if this is a probe. They go, you know, it's how you can see how they're doing it. It's like they lock us down, we get unlocked, they change it a little bit, there's hope, then it happened, you know, so it's just constant incrementalism. And the whole time, the businesses are all underwater.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're getting poorer. We're getting hungrier. The food lines are all getting eroded.
There's Big Ten football is canceled or something.
Big Ten football is canceled. So it's a mess, you know. And they're going to get us into a place where we will not be able to avoid catastrophic effects, even if we are given control of the government. Because, you know, imagine if the food chain freezes up. I mean, you have 40 million people in America, you might have a bad couple of years, Tim.
Yeah.
Where you could get that turned around. So these are, I think, almost baked in the cake at this point, unless, you know, we have sort of a miracle. But enough people are at least becoming concerned about this that, you know, their incrementalism, I think, is getting, you know, challenged more often. I mean, Americans, let's face it, we're just not a well-educated nation. We're not like a thinking.
No. It's stimulus nation. Stimulus response.
Stimulus response, I think, in general. Whereas the Germans, the Danes, you know, the people that I've been in communication with, man, they are organized. This guy I was talking to today, he was, you know, they had got the government's response worked out in advance, like chess moves.
Also, if you're European, you know, you can be a German, you can be French, and you don't necessarily associate with a particular government. In America, we think of, you know, continuity, the government as America.
Yeah, that's right.
And so the idea of revolution is, although we were supposedly created in a revolution, is considered, you know, just not as accepted as most Americans. It's unpatriotic. Whereas in Europe, you know, how many governments, republics has France had? But it's still France. You know, until they just
this is getting. Don't you think this is getting shattered with the Black Lives Matter bifurcation? I mean, it looks to me like they're really trying to set us up for civil war rather than just dumb down patriotism.
Yeah, I think, and this is something where the oligarchs they think they control the situation. They don't, because I think what's one of the unintended consequences that might be the development of genuine white solidarity in the United States, where we've been told not to think that way, and they're forcing people to think that way in terms of demographics and sort of power politics and reality, whereas ideas and, you know, these things don't matter. It's raw demographics. Yeah. Who has the power, and they're putting in those terms. So people are being forced to go out on the streets and join a militia and shoot back at people. And it's all because the elected officials who are given hundreds of millions, billions of dollars a year and resources to do that job are not doing it. They're purposely not doing it to create the very conditions that they're condemning, because they think they can gain some sort of electoral benefit from it, you know.
You know what's so interesting with the shootout in Kenosha? If you look at the videos, they were completely unorganized, this little militia group, mm-hmm. maybe 20 guys. In fact, they were so unorganized that they split up. They got somehow got split apart, and the shooter, the individual who shot the Antifa guys, he was separated from. He was mm-hmm. by himself. And I thought about how unorganized they were, and they were so young looking. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, these 20 guys, and basically came down to just one of them who was using deadly force, absolutely brought the riot to a standstill.
Yeah.
Right? And this was the end of that. They all took off. And I thought to myself, well, what about our militarized police? What about the SWAT squad with the, you know, death wagons that we've been funding as tax?
Yeah, I know, the Bearcats.
I mean, those would have to show up with, like, maybe, you know, some belt-fed 50 calibers. So you can see this is clearly sanctioned by some governments. The Soros mayors and DAs and the lesbian police chiefs are in collusion to permit Black Lives and Antifa to go in and finish off the middle class inside of these these cities.
Broadly speaking, this is economic warfare, and the mayhem, the riots, is where you destroy property, you destroy assets, and clear the businesses out, you know, and that's what they've been doing since May. Since mid-March with the lockdown, but then this is the second phase of it, you know.
So it's going to be do or die, Tim. It's do or die. But, we're going to have to, if the Germans can get the ball rolling, if Europe lights up and you start seeing one country after another ending the lockdown. And remember, we had talks months ago about there's a right way and a wrong way to end the lockdown. The right way is for the citizens simply to take their rights back.
Yeah, because they're not going to get them back. By asking.
Otherwise, they don't really get it back. And so if this happens in Berlin, if they can actually topple a government or basically create a referendum where she, you know, meekly accepts an end to the lockdown, that's taking the rights back. But just, you know, having it incrementally given back to you, what that does is that reinforces the power of the government to start it back up again anytime they want.
Yeah.
Have to take it back. And so if we start seeing this occur in Europe, it's going to be interesting to see what happens inside the United States. And of course, you can see why the Antifa distraction has been set up, because it's so hard to, like, organize against the government when you're having to deal with something, you know, as distracting and destructive as the Antifa riots. So every country has had a certain kind of strategy applied to it. Melbourne and Auckland have gotten the most severe lockdowns, and I think, as you said, it's because they're so isolated that they really can experiment with locking down these areas and just seeing how much the population will put up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they can do that internally in like the United States if they grind the economy down further, you know.
Yeah. Well, everyone's headed to the same place. I mean, in the Brave New World, the population numbers are, I think, the Georgia Guidestones, which means what? You have 8.5 billion that have the cancer mm-hmm. that has to get off of the planet. So that's a brutal process to get rid of that many people. I think that there is a chance, as we have discussed, that they've really overplayed it. Hard to really know to what extent the alternative media forced their hand. I mean, I'd like to believe it had some influence. When you talk to the guys in Europe, the alternative media really was the thing that I think is kind of animating. I mean, any normal person would eventually respond to this because you don't want to be starved to death and you don't want a dictatorship. But the alternative media had created the grammar so that way back when in March, you know, these things got started. And when the German doctors, a lot of them were aware of these ideas, and so they didn't have to go through a long soul-searching process to come to the right decision. And Tim, let me tell you something. We are famous in Germany. No doubt about it. I would estimate there may be 4 people who are aware of powers and principalities. And every one of my doctors. So,
well, then they talked to 4 people. And they talked.
And one of them actually said, say hello to Mr. Helly. I said I would. So we'll see how if our enormous popularity continues to last in Germany over the next week or so. I hope so. I hope that.
Well, it'd be pretty funny because after all said and done, maybe it is Germany that saves civilization.
You know, it would be ironic, isn't it? Yes, and in very frank and honest discussions with some of these individuals who have had really, really tortured lives, Tim, you can imagine some of them have come from East Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Think about growing up there. Think about growing up with the power of the Holocaust myth on top of you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, think about that kind of a... and then, of course, think about, you know, with the constant parasitical destruction, economic destruction of your country every year, right?
Well, because I mean, Germany's the most important economy on the continent. So,
it's been a really... These guys have had a rough go of it, and now so many of them are waking up to the idea of it was just a fake historical narrative that was created for the purpose of enslavement. So they then bring that perspective to analyzing the lockdown.
Yeah, they know a power of an overwhelming narrative or meme or idea, which is not doesn't have much basis in historical reality or evidence.
It's sort of like last week, I think I praised John Rappaport. I said, you know, it was really grateful to John for giving us the grammar and kind of the perspective of a fake viral epidemic with his work on AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I know you were aware, but I was. And so we looked at this COVID thing with that skepticism.
And so many of the people who perpetrated the AIDS hoax are now perpetrating the COVID hoax. Fauci, yes, Redfield, same, Birx. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same. It's the same, you know, lump of evil. Well, I think from my sense of the people in Europe, they have the same perspective on the historical. Their grammar is intact. They know what happened to them. And so this event in Berlin, I mean, let us hope that they have that luck and you know and the you know and just the sacredness of truth. I mean, they are representing the truth against lies. So that's why I and of course, you know, they're going to be saving my butt from starvation if they can pull this thing off. So I'm very much a fan of it and. You know, Tim, I wish I could be there. I told him, I said, hey, if there was possible, I would get on a plane. If I was legal, I would just give it all in the streets. I wouldn't hesitate. Easy to say when you're my age because, you know, the future is so short. But this would be something I would just absolutely just say, okay, we're not leaving until we get it done.
Yes.
Because this is just the attitude you have to bring if you're going to have a future for, you know, your family and your ethnicity. And, I mean, that would be, if I told him, I said, God bless you. And I know whatever your position on God is, let's be broad minded here. But a blessing to you and, you know, best of luck tomorrow, because it's obviously important.
Well, how these things play out, it's hard to predict, but we said this before and I'll say it again, is by accelerating, with the COVID hoax, scamdemic, pandemic, plandemic, whatever you want to call it. They've revealed themselves to the world, and they've gone. Looks like they're going for broke, which actually is an opportunity, because otherwise, if they just kept the water boiling a little longer, simmering, getting a little hotter and hotter, no one would have awakened to it. And this has awakened a lot of people to the reality of the beast system that is destroying them.
You know? Good point. I mean, if they'd waited 50 years with just the put the you know with the pedal to the metal of cultural Marxism.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have had any trouble at all. They certainly wouldn't be facing some kind of demonstration in Berlin tomorrow. So they had some kind of a plan and a reason for it. And I like to believe that the alt media was part of it, you know, that they could see that there was a possibility that there'd just be too many people with too much information and the propaganda would just start breaking down everywhere. So they felt they had enough control power at this point. Give it a shot. You know, I was watching, I think his name is Dan Andrews, the Melbourne premier.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a press conference And the guy, the person said, "Well, how do you think, you know, like your strategy is working?" And he gave an answer of like, "Well, of course, you know, first we have to deal with the medical crisis." And you know, I said, "The medical crisis." So it was a pretty stupid answer when you have like starvation and the whole city's collapsing and all these other things are far worse than
the, yeah. Starvation is that sort of a medical problem?
Yeah, it can be.
I guess when you get sick from malnutrition, but
my point is, I could detect something in his voice,
mm-hmm.
and I could see he was a little bit worried. I think he really was not even believing it himself when he was talking. I've been watching Newsom, our governor here. He hasn't cracked yet. He has a pretty good stone poker face when he gives these proclamations. But Andrews today looked weak. It'll be interesting to watch them, because pay attention to their psychology over the next 2 weeks. If you see Berlin and one other capital go up, like say Rome concedes and then the lockdown is actually brought down by the people, let's just watch old Andrews and the cackling Masonic witch Ardenne in New Zealand. Let's just see how their voice holds up in the press conferences, because if they see the power of the people rolling their way, I want to see how courageous they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easy to be courageous when everyone is fooled and you've got the power of the military and the police. But, you know, if you start see things unraveling, it'll be interesting to see how these guys handle it. I hope they all have breakdowns.
Yeah, and that'll be a merciful.
Yes, that would be the most merciful of their
because what they deserve, because what they're doing is
most heinous crime in history.
Yeah. So, okay, Joe,
Tim, have a great weekend, and I think this is going to be an exciting week. Let's hope we have some good news to talk about next week.
Yes, see how it unfolds. Good night, though.
All right, talk to you.
Bye bye. Thank you.